me being one of the younger designers, like one of my jobs was get into the office and pull the blinds open so it didn't feel like you're in a cage. And I just distinctly remember Bruce Duckworth being on a call with David. They would talk a lot. Mm-hmm. And he said the word Lars. He was like, oh, hey, Lars. And I'm like opening blinds and I'm like, look down. I'm like, I only know.
There's only one Lars.
Yeah, totally, right? Like it's a very, it's not an odd name. I guess it depends where you are in the world. Yeah. Scandinavia is maybe a little less obscure. But anyway, for whatever reason, I just had this weird hunch. And I was like, Bruce, who are they talking to? And he was like, hey, it's Lars. It's this guy from this band. I was like, yeah, I know
that's
that.
Right.
Hey, what's going on? Today we're talking to Jamie McCathy. He's one of the independent creative directors behind one of the most anticipated records in a really long time. We're talking about Metallica's 72 Seasons, the album with the yellow color, the gatefold that opens up with the interior die cuts, like a 72 with the band members' faces just powering through that die cut. It's got the blackened toys sprawled all over that yellow floor on the cover. Jamie checks all the boxes for a great packaging unboxed guest. Now he's worked on alcohol brands, baby packaging, fashion brands, iconic heavy metal albums. He's done a ton of Metallica albums. And he comes on and he's going to talk to us about being with one agency for 17 years, building a career around what you personally care about and what you actually want to design. He talked about being in the Metallica headquarters. He gives us like a rundown on the behind the scenes stuff, like what it's like working with Metallica over multiple albums and why he left Turner Duckworth to pursue his passion. If you're listening to this on your podcast app, this is definitely one that you're going to want to stop and switch over to YouTube. You're going to want to watch this because Jamie shares photos from behind the scenes of the shoot that have never been seen before. You see the video of them torching the items that are on the album cover. Like they literally had not a blowtorch, they had a flamethrower on the streets of San Francisco, just flamethrowing these items. And we talk about how they shot the image as like one big image behind a die line so that they would make sure that this image would be able to translate to the actual packaging. So they actually had a die line with the photographer in terms of just aligning everything, which is pretty cool. It just gives you like a sense of the concept and the thoughtfulness that went into this. It wasn't just an album cover. This thing extends way beyond just this cover. So you're going to want to watch this on YouTube versus listening to this on your podcast app. Or you can do them both. Either's good for me. All right, so we've been making videos on how to design packaging. We've done packaging teardown videos explaining how stuff is made and behind the scenes of videos like these. Let us know what you prefer, what you want to hear, what you want to see more of. So let us know in the comments, what was the first album that you remember buying as a kid? Mine was Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden. I think I was like in sixth grade. And then it was quickly followed up by Beastie Boys' License to Ill. Here's the episode with Jamie McCathy. Can't wait to find out what you were listening to. Super stoked on the new Metallica album, the killer gatefold album for Metallica. Dude, that's amazing. But before we get into the Metallica album, which we are going to talk about, like 100%, you spent 17 years at Turner Duckworth, not just in the UK, but then you moved to San Francisco.
That's right.
Like, how's that built your career? I mean, that's a long time to be with one agency.
Yeah, a couple of things, and because it's certainly an uncommon thing to do as a creative, yeah, is generally stick around at one place. A couple of things that I'll say is that, one, they were an incredible company. When I first joined, it was in 2004. I'd graduated college in England. I'm British. And I moved to London and I was running around doing the circuit in London, you know, doing kind of internships, trying to get a job. But I had desperately wanted to get a job at Turner Duckworth. At the time, they were just like this like incredible agency. When I graduated college, I did a lot of packaging, was actually kind of a focus of the college that I went to. And so Turner Duckworth were like just the shit. They were the company that did the best of the best of that kind of work. Yeah. So I was fortunate. I got an internship, but I got a job eventually, and I worked in the London studio for about 7 or 8 years. And the you know, at that time, it felt like time for me to kind of make a change, make a move. And I'd certainly interviewed at other agencies in London, but they had this amazing program where you could kind of swap lives with another designer. And I swapped lives with a couple of designers where I'd come out to the Bay Area and spend like 5-6 weeks and just hang out and work in this office. I did that a few times. I worked on the Def Magnetic project while I was still in London. I loved it out here. So I kind of asked as one of my options, like, hey, instead of me kind of like making the move to another agency, can I make a move out to San Francisco? Because the offices were so different. They were the same. They had an ethos that felt the same, but they were very, very kind of different. So it felt like I worked at two different places. And then I spent the last 10 or 11 years here in San Francisco working at the San Francisco studio.
Wow.
The other thing about Turner Duckworth that has and was always amazing is the diversity of work. And so that's kind of what enabled me to keep my job at one place as long as I did. And when I worked on Def Magnetic, the week after I flew back from the Bay Area and was back in London, I was working on Desitin Diaper Cream. And that, I always tell people, that is kind of what kept me in my job. I worked on like Royal Mail stamps and DNAD awards. And then I also did like trophies for John Smith's Ale. And then I also did Metallica. You know, it was just so broad that it kept my job super interesting. And so
that's right, man.
One of the things I always loved about that agency.
So like from metal to bums.
Always.
Right? Always. So you spent time in the same agency in two different studios.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the UK studio and the US studio?
I mean, it's a cultural difference first and foremost, which, albeit we speak the same language through English, but it is a very different place. And I've learned that in the 10, 11 years that I've lived in America now. And so that feels different. But also clients are different here. And so primarily at the time, London worked with mostly European clients, although we did have American clients as well. And then the San Francisco studio at the time worked mostly with kind of American clients and Asia as well. So that in itself kind of drew the big difference. I think the scale of this country, the size of America at the time, the San Francisco studio was working on more branding, holistic branding versus kind of packaging projects. And so not that packaging was kind of like the focus, but London was very good at packaging design. The San Francisco studio did a lot of like big visual identity. At the time when I moved here, we just worked on and finished the Coca-Cola visual identity. We'd done Amazon, we'd done Levi's, some really big brands. So that was one of the big differences. My move here in my career was to work with bigger brands and work on more diverse systems. Which, you know, definitely coincides with the kind of work we were doing with Metallica as well, because it's beyond the package itself.
You worked on a couple of Metallica albums, Desitin. Like, what's the one standout project that you've worked on, either in the UK or the US that was packaging related?
The Def Magnetic project was pretty incredible. It was pretty amazing. So I always would use and hold that one up as being kind of one of the projects that I was incredibly proud to be a part of. I think though, if I look back at kind of other projects, some of the other things I'm incredibly proud of, I mean, recently we just worked on Maker's Mark before I left Turner Duckworth. And that visual identity system, I'm incredibly proud of. I think that's beautiful work. I also love the work that I did way back early in my career with a brand called Waitrose, which is a British supermarket. I worked on a lot of those early projects in like 2006. And I think that work still holds up today as being really beautiful packaging. And really was kind of the ethos of Turner Duckworth, that everything, no matter what it is, should be beautiful. And so that work, I think, really stands up and kind of holds that ethos.
Yeah. And going back to like Death Magnetic, right? So one, I remember when this thing came out, man. I remember when this album came out. It was everywhere. Like, you saw it, like, obviously you see it on the Die Line, you see it like on Pen Awards. And for anybody that's listening that maybe a little too young to remember this, I can't believe there'd be somebody that's too young to remember this, but it was like, you know, you had a die cut coffin, you had the magnetic poles like visualized. I mean, there was like die cut, there was like layers. I don't think there had been an album that had come out that was that detailed at that time, because everybody was kind of like shifting to digital. So yeah. That was pretty awesome. But that was a few years ago. So what role did you play? Were you still a creative? Were you a creative director at that point, or were you more in the design side?
I was a designer. So when there's a slight tangent, but worthwhile, I believe, because it kind of gets to how and why we met and worked with Metallica. Because, you know, at the time we're a design agency. We have two offices. We have one in London. We have one in San Francisco. I'm a designer. And it's going to sound weird, but we're in this amazing building in West London, and it was slightly sunken in the ground. So like the windows were higher up, and they had these like big security blinds. And so in the morning, me being one of the younger designers, like one of my jobs was get into the office and pull the blinds open so it didn't feel like you're in a cage. And I just distinctly remember Bruce Duckworth being on a call with David. They would talk a lot. Mm-hmm. And he said the word Lars.
Please don't listen to my phone calls.
He was like, oh, hey, Lars. And I'm like opening blinds, and I'm like, look down. I'm like, I only know.
There's only one Lars.
Yeah, totally, right? Like it's not an odd name. I guess it depends where you are in the world. Yeah. In Scandinavia, it's maybe a little less obscure. But anyway, for whatever reason, I just had this weird hunch. And I was like, Bruce, who are they talking to? And he was like, hey, it's Lars. It's this guy from this band. I was like, yeah, I know
that's
that.
Right.
And so at the time, Lars and David started hanging out. Their kids went to school, I believe, and they met at a school fete. So they met at this like school event, Lars and David Turner. And basically, he was kind of saying, hey, like, I would love for you guys to work. We've got a big album coming out. We haven't had an album since Saint Anger. This is a really big deal. Would you be interested? And David, I remember being somewhat apprehensive, because he was like, we're like the branding agency, right? We don't, and he was friends with this guy, and it was a new friendship, and they were close. And he was like, I don't want to fuck up your album.
Oh, screw it up. Yeah.
Totally. It's a big deal for you. But I was kind of, I guess not detriment, but I remember being kind of really pushing the project on Bruce and David, saying, hey, you want to work with the biggest brands in the world? We've just worked with Coca-Cola and Levi's and Amazon. I'm saying this is the biggest band in the world, and we absolutely should be trying to take this on.
Check out SpecRite, the number one platform for specification management. Not sure what board your box uses? Not sure how many colors or how much headspace your packaging requires? If you don't SpecRite, you'll guess wrong. SpecRite.com.
Hey, I want to introduce you to IDPDirect.com. We recently won a Silver Pen Awards for collaborating on the future of sustainable packaging. If you want to work directly with a packaging manufacturer and you're tired of distributors and middlemen, check them out. Visit IDPDirect.com to learn more.
And so that, I guess, kind of gave me this amazing position to be just like a young guy who's a designer who's like thirsty for this project. So when it kicked off, David flew me out to San Francisco to meet with the band and talk to them about what the album was going to be called. We didn't have a name for it yet.
Yeah.
So that kind of just got me in the process. And then I stuck around. The meeting went amazing.
So young designer, super hungry. You get this project that happens to come across, like you overhear it, and you like, of course you're going to be like 100%. So
yeah.
Are you a Metallica fan before this?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I'm like, I guess in 2006, which is when this would have been, I'm early 20s, but I grew up in an era of like, you know, the first record I ever heard when I was 9 years old was Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
And that was the first cassette I ever purchased.
Yeah.
The first CD I ever bought was the Black Album. So, you know, I'm of an era in the 90s where Load is coming out, but I absolutely love it. I'm a huge Load Reload fan. I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm at college when Saint Anger comes out, and I love it. Like,
fuck everyone. Yeah.
I think it's great. And then I land my job. I'm in London, and so I'm like a mid-20s designer living in London. Big metal head. Just like general like metal rock music fan. And then this project comes up, and again, like the agency is diverse. We work on, at that time, we're probably working on like Waitrose supermarket, like canned beans and pet food. And then And then there's like a, hey, we might do an album for Metallica. I'm like, fuck yeah, we are. Absolutely. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
How could you not? So then, all right, so they fly you out.
I'm in HQ. I'm a 24-year-old sat in, you know, what I remember from the Some Kind of Monster DVD.
Yeah.
I'm in that room in that building having a meeting on at that table where like Lars is in James's face. I'm just sat at the table. And at that time, we're just trying to like David Turner's with me.
Yeah. But are you all right? So like, are you playing it off, right? It's like, you know, pretend like you've been there before where you're just like, oh yeah, this is just James and Lars. Are you kind of like fanboying inside? Like
I'm fanboying inside. I'm pretty British and cold. So, I can play down scenarios. Yeah. I think relatively well, but I mean, anyone that knows me, I'm freaking out. Yeah. And so in that process, we're trying to land a name because ultimately they're like, design a cover. And we're like, we can't design an album cover without a name for the album.
Yeah.
That's a really important part of the process. Like naming, it's like any brand project, right? Like name a brand. Now I can think about design, but it has to start with a name and a strategy. And then I can design something. So the time I remember David asking James, like, what's the album about? Like, what's it about? It's like, James doesn't tend to have a kind of a theme per se. And then over time, David's built this amazing relationship with James and co, where he's kind of able to draw out of them, maybe them having a bit of a theme without them knowing that they had one. And so in that album, James was talking about how at the time, I think friends of his had passed away from being drawn into the heavy metal lifestyle, the kind of the rock life. And, you know, I think that there was definitely lyrical content that he kind of spoke about. And as he was talking about that, my memory is that David is looking through a song sheet with titles and, you know, potential names. And David's like, the word Death Magnetic was like, it's right here on your song sheet. It's one of your songs. Like, you just described what this album's about. Like, that's the album name. And so I stuck around then after that meeting went amazingly well. Mm-hmm. And then I stuck around in San Francisco for 5 weeks and worked on it with the team. And that was super collaborative. It was incredibly, you know, it was one of those where I was in San Francisco just to work on that project. So all my other projects back home were kind of on pause and I was just like head down working on this Metallica album. But honestly, if you can imagine a studio of like 30 designers desperate to kind of like wrap up whatever project they were doing and
they can jump in
it on it. There were lots of people that were like throwing in ideas and it really felt like a kind of a collaboration. So for me as the fan, my one adamant thing was, this is your comeback album. We have to bring the band's original logo back. So I was like, the iconography is based on the Metallica logo. It has to be there. And so that was the album. We brought back the James's old logo and tweaked it and redrew it. There was an amazing designer called Emily Charette who came up with the kind of the ground that looked like filings in a coffin.
Yeah.
So that was her. Like everyone had the kind of the coffin and everyone had the kind of, I think I had sketched like a magnet shaped like a coffin with the grounds around it, but she made it the dirt. And it was like, oh, that was just like the cherry. And then there was another designer called Marty who actually had this idea of like a book that was deep. And so we kind of like all worked together and merged all of these ideas and presented it. And that was it.
Killer story on this Death Magnetic, which was, I don't know how many years ago, right?
2006.
Crazy. So still an amazing piece of packaging that's held up forever. And I think growing up, like I went through like Kill 'Em All, like everything. For me, it's funny because like you started at like the Black Album. And I don't make this podcast a Metallica podcast, but like my first concert I ever saw was Justice for All. Like I lived in Hawaii. That was like the first show that they were doing for that particular run. They were in Honolulu. So like my dad's like, all right, I'll fly with you to Honolulu. We lived on Maui. A friend of mine flew with us. And then my dad like drove us to the venue and he's like, is it cool if I come in with you guys? And I was like in seventh grade or something. I'm like, no, dad, you know, this is like me and my buddies. And like, we met a bunch of people And to this day, I regret saying no to my dad. I'm like, how amazing would it have been to be like my first concert with my dad, being Metallica. And I feel like such a dick. But no, it's like, you know, at that point, like once Jason left the band, for me, it's like the band kind of like dwindled. But they've had some good hits like throughout.
Yeah.
So it's funny. Like everybody has like a different era of Metallica, which is awesome because of their staying power, but their albums have always been amazing. So like Death Magnetic definitely holds a place, especially with all the visuals. So today you're no longer Turner Duckworth, right? You're not freelance. You're an independent creative director. So kind of just switching gears here in terms of like your day to day as an independent creative director, like who are you directing?
So, if it's cool, I'll explain a little bit like how the job came about, because it'll help explain who I ended up directing. So it's a tangent, absolutely. But I promise it's on. So I leave, I have my notes in, I'm leaving my job. My aim for leaving my job is to be an independent creative director. And I guess independent creative director, meaning I intend to design more than I have done. I was an executive creative director when I left my role. So I was involved in creative. I was involved a lot in kind of the strategy portions of kind of brand projects, but I wanted to get back. And I'm also aware that people are better at design than I am, and I'm better at directing than they are. And so there's kind of an admittance there that I'm probably not as good. I mean, I know I'm not as good as a lot of really amazing talented designers. And so my intent with being an independent creative director is that like I intend to work with others. It just so happens that I'm independent. I don't have an agency. And so my hope is to build a network of people that I can continue to work with even, you know, in the future. At the time of leaving, there was a talented designer who I had also previously worked at Turner Duckworth with that was freelance. And so David Turner, when he left Turner Duckworth, the one client that he kind of kept as a side project, because he's retired now, was Metallica. Yeah. And so David's been working with Metallica since the last album. So I also worked on the last record and the artwork for that. But David's been working with them. So he did like the black and like shortlist thing, you know, like, and all of the S&M too. Like David did all of those projects and all of that design work. But when he was asked to work on a record, he was like, oh shit, I need help. So David called me and was like, hey, I hear you're leaving. That's fantastic news. I absolutely need your help. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's a dream first gig. And the day I left my job, like the very next day, I'd driven out to Marin to go listen to the album and kick off this project. So it was immediate. It was literally the next day.
Wow. So is this like you pick up the phone and like, hey, Lars, I'm coming over. Oh, you play the whole thing for me?
It's David's kind of organized the meeting, but yeah. We're there with the producers there, Greg and a couple of other people, and we're in the studio listening to their record. It's obviously very top secret. No one's, you know, it's all locked doors. At that time, we're doing COVID tests to get into the building as well.
Oh yeah, of course.
But we meet and we listen to it and we're talking about how we can do this. I've also told David that about this other designer who's incredible. He worked on Hardwired for Self-Destruct. He did all that cool type, and he actually worked on, and it was his idea to kind of do the jolted Metallica logo. And so I was like, look, Ian's available and incredible.
Yeah.
We could hire him to work on this project. So it was the team of three of us. So I'm creative director, but I'm also being directed or joint directing with David, and we're working with Ian, and we're all kind of designing and coming up with ideas. But I also think creative director, the position has kind of changed. Like it used to be the creative director. It's one of the things I used to tell people that want to be directors at Turner Duckworth, that directing isn't about directing other people. It's about managing the direction of a project. And so for me, the managing the direction means I might not design everything in it. I'm definitely not going to take photographs and illustrate. I'm going to hire incredible people to do that.
Yeah.
And so directing is about directing the overall direction of the brand. Yeah.
So the new album, there's a lot of yellow.
There's a lot of yellow.
And there's a lot of black, right? So in terms of like the photography for this, did you direct this shot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. And all right. So this, so you listen to the album, and I know I sent you like a list of questions and these are none of those.
That's fine.
Like, as you're building the strategy, like, are you listening to this nonstop? What's the strategy look like for an album? Like, it goes beyond the album.
Yeah. Yeah. So and this is probably related to what I love about what San Francisco Turnadot were doing at the time when I left and moved to America, and they've continued to build and grow and do, is that it's much more holistic brand. It's everything a brand touches. And when we worked on Death Magnetic, we worked on the packaging and the branding, we did. But what was amazing, we noticed quickly, was that like the lighting and that record were the coffins that we made, were like the lights. And I remember seeing that and Lars kind of talking to David and being like, everything is connected. And like, in some ways, when you think about these album launches, they're campaigns, they're whole campaigns. Yeah. And it can't just be a cover. It has to be so much more. And so it's a visual identity system. It's a branding system in some ways. And that's how we've approached it. So that as a side note, because when David came to me, it was, yes, we're going to do an album cover, but also we need to think about what is the system so that when there's a website, when there's a poster, when there's a, what ties it together, what binds it? How do you recognize the launch of this record wherever you go and whatever you see? So that's the brief. And Lars has become huge about this. Like, I mean, me and David ended up being a part of like the video shoots. So we were not directing the video because we hired the right person, the director, but we're helping them choose the director for the music videos. Anyway, so the process, we hear the song, it's top secret. We can't take the music away. It's locked away in Metallica HQ. So we heard it once. I don't even think I should have said that. Anyway,
we'll cut that out.
We also, David was helping Metallica before I get involved, but figure out the name of the record, and in that process got from James what the record is about. And James spoke to a book he'd read that involved the kind of the ethos of 72 Seasons, which is about the first 18 years of your life. And James wrote in this email, and David briefed me almost like with James's email to David, which described what the record was about. And ultimately this line came up, which was Prisoner of Childhood. And James wrote it in this email, and David was like, that to me is like the brief, Prisoner of Childhood, go. And so the first process was us just riffing on what visual kind of ideas spark from this kind of line or this theme, like the first 18 years of your life, prison of childhood. And David Turner, brilliantly as always, was like, the idea of a crib is like bars and the prison of childhood. And so he was like, that's the idea. Like, so David was kind of running on that. I had this idea that was around, there was a lot of theme throughout the lyrics that were about shadows and darkness. And so I had these different concepts that were about shadows. And in this process, by the way, we're showing the band just like pictures, images, all sorts of stuff that they're not designs, but they're kind of ideas or thought starts for visuals. And so I show lots of like long shadows and dark and light. And David had this idea because Lux Eterna, we knew, was going to be the first single on this Light Eternal. And there's a lot of positive in this lyrical content this time as well, a lot of really positive stuff. So David also had this amazing idea of like a bright yellow, like a warning sign yellow. And then I was playing with shadows, and then Ian had this video idea. Again, it was nothing to do with an album, but it was like, what if we shot a video where we just burnt toys? And it was all about kind of like this fucked up childhood kind of theme. And so, you know, through a couple of rounds of visuals, we kind of landed on an amalgamation of all these ideas. And then we also had another idea that was around a 72 as a kind of like the cover, just the 7 and a 2.
Yeah.
That made its way into the record eventually.
To the internal. All right. So like, as I'm looking at the cover, right? We've got the yellow, the light, you've got the black, the burnt. Then if I look at all the items, there's like baby toys, right? You've got like, you've got the crib, obviously. You've got like a teddy bear. Then you've got like a tricycle, which is, you know, maybe like 2 or 3 years old, you know, at that point. And then you've got like, it's like the entire progression of this person's life all the way until you get like these angrier, like looks like a pack of cigarettes. You got a baseball bat, right? Yep. And then you've got the beer. And it's like, that's kind of like where it leaves the scene, which is like, this is what's missing in music for me is like, dude, when I was like, you know, when I was a kid, I'd sit there, I'd pull out this album and I would just stare at it. I remember like there was an Ozzy Osbourne album that was like fully illustrated. He was a dragon. He had a tongue and I can't remember what album that was. And you're just like looking at the illustration, you're looking at the people in the background. You're like, what are these people doing? And as you're listening to it, right? Like on this one, like you would sit there and just stare at all these pieces and see the work that went into it. And like, what are they trying to, you know, I would probably count all these pieces and see if there's 72 pieces in the shot, right? It's like how, like, I don't know. That's like where your head goes as a kid, as you're listening to music. Like, what was the idea behind this?
So the 72 seasons that represents the first 18 years, the intent was, yes, the crib was like the hero of the image. But then I remember we had a concept early on that was just the crib on a white background. Mm-hmm. And Lars was like, it feels like it's missing something. And we had this burnt toy idea. And we're like, wouldn't it be cool to tell a story around the crib that was almost like the remnants of an 18-year-old that's gone through progression. So it's everything from baby to 18.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's gone off the rails. And the other thing that was important to David, and I love the thinking and the depth of thinking, but the burnt hole in the crib was a kind of an additional thought of like, does it look like they've escaped or does it look like a disaster? And like that kind of... what you're explaining of like being able to read into album covers is kind of missing. Like the not knowing is part of the joy. It's storytelling, but less literal. It's kind of really, hopefully visually telling you something if you read into it, but you can kind of take away something that you want from it and others can from it as well. There's not 72 items, unfortunately, but we certainly
or there could be. Go buy the album.
The intent was feel like there is. I mean, there is a lot of you can see, but on the back there's even more items.
Yeah,
and then I don't know if you have a copy of the record, but there's lyric sheets and I've got the CD here as well, and like we then also kind of have individual items that were all kind of used throughout. But there's kind of individual burnt items.
Like looking at the album, it's definitely an iconic piece. There's already like a ton of YouTube videos out there. Like, is this the iconic album for Metallica? Like people are, you know, asking, and it's only been out for, you know, like hours at this point.
Yeah.
But if we look at the gatefold, like, well, once you open it, then you've got those die cuts.
Yeah.
Which are killer. I think you shared the video of James opening it. All right. So you've got the exterior, and when you open it up, did you direct the photography of the band as well?
That was another really big deal. So a couple of separate things. And again, this is the joy of working with multiple creatives versus just on your own, is that like we're able to kind of share our ideas and make this a much richer experience rather than a single-minded creative would do, right? The collaboration makes it so much more interesting. So we have like the cover art and the idea, which, and then this is mainly because like, if you say the word, and it's very Turner Duckworth and very David Turner, but if you said the word prisoner of childhood, this is an amazing encapsulation of prisoner of childhood. It has positivity in the beaming light. It has warning in the yellow. It has all of these items. It's a dark, but also light thing. It's a great album cover. The rest of the depth of this is that, you know, the die cut is a 7 and a 2, obviously, and there are bars. So again, there's a reference to the crib. There's a reference to that theme of prisoner of childhood. The images of the band, I think, is really important. So as we're approaching this, we're not just looking at album covers. Like I said, like Ian had this idea about like burning toys as a video that could have been anything. One of the things I felt adamant about in this project was, if it's about showing the band in a new light, was kind of one of the briefs we gave ourselves. And one of it was to say, you've done years of wearing leather jackets on a cool grungy background with sunglasses. We actually had a in our presentation, like an image of them looking cool, looking tough. And we put a line through it and we said, this is about you guys and the first 18 years of your life having an impact on you. You shouldn't be macho. You shouldn't be tough looking. That's expected. And we want to portray you in a different light. And so I'd found this photographer who's also out of England, called Lee Jeffries, and he does beautiful work. And he actually, primarily his work is, with people that live on the street. And so his work is very close up portraits of people that live on the street that have incredible expressive faces. And he builds relationships with these people and he has so much amazing work. So I found him, was like, wouldn't it be amazing to shoot with someone like this that captures like the true essence of someone who's deep in thought and maybe isn't as flattering as you might expect from a photograph. And let's work with him. And so that's kind of what came out of this shoot. And so these shots are of an older,
worn down. You're seeing age.
There's age, there's vulnerability, which I love that the band, who are so creative and so open, Kirk in particular, was just so embracing of this idea of like, let's show wrinkles and all. And like this shot of James is just utterly incredible.
Yeah.
And so
these look like those, like, looks like those Dust Bowl, photographs from the US,
So Lee flew out and I wasn't able to turn up to the shop, but Lee's process is, he's like, it's naturally lit. He's like, I want to go for a walk and have a conversation with you. He likes urban environments. So he hung out with Lars in downtown San Francisco, was walking in like the Tenderloin and just like taking shots on the street. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a snap.
So this wasn't like a studio shot?
No, this is just, and each of them, Lee went and hung out with each of them in different, because they all live in different places, and just spent a couple of hours hanging out, drinking some coffee, took a shot on the street, and then that was it.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then of course you've got the bars and you've got a line. So like, I'm assuming each of their eyes comes through, right? Like
eyes were really important. That, and Lee's photography and all of his shots, you see kind of like eyes are almost the kind of the focal point. And it's that storytelling of age and depth and what someone might have been through.
So you've done Death Magnetic, you've done 72 Seasons, you said you worked on a couple others. Like, obviously you've done Desitin and some other things, but like, what comes across your desk where you're like as stoked as you were the first time you heard Lars's name on that phone call? Like, what are the projects that really turn you on
nowadays, or just
nowadays?
I mean, this 72 Seasons project was a pretty impeccable project to land as my first gig, leaving my full-time job. I was certainly, I think most people that are going freelance or leaving to be kind of independent, they probably are a lot concerned about the kind of work they're going to get. And so this was an amazing job. I've been working with, some different people, there's a company called Tillamook that make dairy. I've been working with them a little bit, which has been amazing. They've been really fun. And then friends of mine who used to work at Maker's Mark, in fact, one of them was the master distiller for Maker's Mark. They're building their own distillery. So I'm working with them on building a brand and everything. We haven't even landed a name yet. So we're working on that with them, but that project's really fun. And there's going to be more. So really, honestly, I'm just looking for that variation, I guess, that I had always had when I was at Turner Duckworth. I want to work on breweries. I want to work on heavy metal albums. I want to work on, jam. It's whatever.
The next J-Lo
album. I would love to work on more music. I mean, music is, because it really is, by the way, the shot, Stan Musilik is the photographer that shot this, and this is one shot. It's not I've got images of like us being in there and it was just lit a couple of different ways, but he painted a seamless bright yellow and we placed all the items before they were burnt. And then we hired this amazing team to kind of place them in position back when we had them, and then take the shot.
Wow.
Like I say that because I think that the way that we at least view these, and based on, you know, maybe some of the more commercial corporate brands that I've worked on, this is an art piece. Like it should feel like a piece of art.
No, and just, you know, and getting the lighting perfect, right? Where everything is just beaming from that center to get that the shadows and everything happening properly. Like, yeah, you would think, you know, you could piece it together and make it a little bit easier than actually doing it in real life. So yeah, I mean, that is a piece of art. And the reason I asked if you'd worked on the photography part of this is because I did see this on a website and I saw this in a few different areas. I'm like, oh, I wonder if this was shot by a different team. And then this was like, okay, this is what you have to use versus like building an entire ecosystem around this concept.
It's Lars's vision was us as the creative team was like,
amazing.
Help us make this launch feel like it holds together. So we were working with the web team, the stage guy, the guy that's building the stage and doing all the video work for the stage. Some of the shoot of this crib has made its way to the stage. And so like, you're going to see a lot of this ecosystem live together. So I was just finding this on my phone for when we shot it, but the only thing we comped out was the light. So you can see the kind of the light that gave you the glow. Like that's the only thing we removed or retouched out of the image.
So then in that shot, you've got all the pieces off to the left of the crib that wrap around to the back of the album.
Yeah.
Like, had you already considered this is the front and then it's going to wrap around, or like, why didn't you have more pieces off to the right? Like to give yourself that flexibility.
We already knew. Yeah. We already had it laid out. It's like, we'd pretty much been like, we need this and we need this. And so we had this die line up on a screen with the shot.
As we're reviewing pieces
and we're moving items around. So we already know that like basically our canvas is this.
That's crazy.
That's our canvas. So this is the die line we've got up as we're with the photographer and the retoucher, and we're moving things and we're shifting things, and then we capture that one shot.
Wow. Dude, that's a killer process. I did see, so everything's, dude, I'm like super stoked. Talking about this process is like just sitting across the desk from Lars. How do you get work from this? Obviously you've got Maker's Mark and a couple other things happening. How do you personally like catapult this into more work?
I don't know, honestly. And it's one of those where we've been fortunate enough to always work with this incredible band. Primarily because of this relationship that a personal relationship that David and Lars sparked, honestly, it's kind of where this all began. As mentioned, I would love to do more music work, but it's one of those things that's very personal, I think, to a lot of artists and musicians and other creatives. I guess one of the things I'm just going to say is that, like, the way I see it, Metallica are some of the most creative people I know, and they love this process as much as we do. James is a graphic designer, without a doubt. Lars is a branding visionary, without a doubt. Kurt got really into this process, and like Rob was just like all over the videos, and everyone was so engaged. But I say all that because I think that their relationship with David Turner is so integrated that like, I think it's quite hard. And I think a lot of bands, I don't know if you're in bands or have been in bands, but when you get your album artwork, the general thing that's done is you ask a buddy or someone you know that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's a tough thing to kind of pivot and say, I've done this and now like get more work. I mean, one of the thoughts I had is to kind of maybe use this process and speak to other record labels and things, but it's a tough one because you also have to have a certain amount of budget to want to do this right. I mean, this is one of the things we're lucky with. This band are willing to spend the money and the time that it takes to make something utterly beautiful. And that doesn't come cheap or easy.
Dude, amazing. Would you be down to, you know, talk about this whole process at a design conference, like, you know, Pen Awards or, you know, those types of things?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's fun because I think that most designers that probably have a commercial career don't get to do the things we probably dreamt of doing when we were becoming designers, right?
100%.
I think that I have my second year tutor at college, who I love and respect, he was amazing. But in the end of my second year at college, he wouldn't let me do a self-initiated project on anything related to skating, surfing, or music. He was like, you can't do that. And I was like, why? And he basically told me, because you will never get to do that in your career. In your career, you'll never get to work on things you actually like. And I was like, bummed. And in some ways, it was a great piece of advice. But at the same time, maybe part of why I left my job and what I'm seeking is to be able to work on things I actually love. Like, I think as a creative, it's hard sometimes to work on brands or projects where you're like, I just don't care about this brand. I don't care about this product.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't get diaper rash.
Yeah. Like, I don't care about Destin. I don't. I remember I was responsible for the Brawny Man change, whenever that was. And I'm like, I love the work. I could care less about Brawny. I could care less about paper towels.
So like when they changed to the new Brawny guy, like that whole illustration and pack design.
That was me and my team. Yeah, we worked on that guy. But again, like, so this is like where the work I stand by and I love, and I'm like, I don't really care about Brawny, if I'm honest.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. So, all right. So as a designer, you see your pack on shelf, you're going through the process and you love like the detail and the illustration and the print process and how to get there and how the boldness of it. But as a product, you're not like, you're not going home.
It's a paper towel.
You're not ripping a paper towel off at home going, I fucking love this.
It's not a record. And I think that's what I mean by there's something about that childhood dream of being a designer when you want to become a creative or a designer or an artist or an illustrator, whatever it is, you're not thinking, you know what I wish I'd do is paper towels. That's not what you're thinking. You probably are more likely thinking, I want to design records. I want to make skate videos. I want to do like, when I was a kid, I wanted to do like looking at like the future primitive VHS, like tape, like cover with that skeleton doing a hand plan. Like, I want to do that. I want to do posters, and that's what designers grow up thinking they're going to do, and they don't get to do it. So I think it'd be fun to do talks on this because it's almost like the exact same process I would have given Brawny paper towels, but it's heavy metal packaging and branding. Yeah,
and you're just like amazed to be part of it. Like you're like this is meaningful to you.
Yeah.
So amazing. Yeah, I know for me it was like in terms of like skate videos, I was like, Band This was a killer video. Like the cover was like this kid, like the old school skateboard was yellow and black actually.
Totally.
And then, yeah, like I always thought like I'd grow up and be doing rock concert posters and then come to realize most designers do those for free.
Yeah.
For their portfolio.
Yeah.
So getting paid to do a Metallica album, 72 seasons. Awesome. I live in Arizona. We only have two seasons. It's hot or cold.
Yeah.
So this would have been like 36 seasons if they were from Arizona. But, dude, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you being on here. Like I said, I was going to run out and grab the album. It's sold out in town, so I got to order it. I'll probably get it here in the next couple of days. As designers, you're right. We don't always get to work on the things that we're most passionate about. So seeing and hearing from somebody that has, it almost like reignites this passion of like, I'm going to go out there and do more work that I want to do.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. I mean, again, as like an independent creative, one of the things I've been questioning is like, do I enter this into design awards like agencies do? That's kind of a weird question to ask a personal person doing it. And I'm like, I would love to talk more about this work in the hope to do more of this kind of work. So I think maybe, I don't know.
100%.
The awards, 100%, man. I don't care as much about like spreading the word in the hope that maybe I'll get some more like, I mean, Megadeth, you need some work, I'll do it. I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually taking my 10-year-old daughter to go see the Misfits with Glenn Danzig singing in the next, like the next couple of weeks.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. You know,
yeah. I'm like just trying to, I'm living through her. I'm like, imagine being 10 going with your dad to go see the Misfits.
That's the one.
All right. That was the episode. If you want to get a hold of Jamie McCathy, definitely check out the show notes. I've got his contact info in there. I've got contact infos for the photographer, for everybody that was mentioned in this show. Check it out.